Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, you will hear from the candidates for Central Wisconsin's 72nd Assembly District, which includes Wisconsin Rapids, Buren, and Port Edwards in Wood County, the town of Grant in Portage County, and much of Adams County, including the communities of Adams and Friendship. Incumbent Republican Scott Krug has represented the district for 4 years and is seeking election to a third term. His committee assignments include children and families, criminal justice and corrections, and rural economic development and rural affairs. Krug faces a challenge from Dana Duncan, president of the Port Edwards School Board, and an attorney whose legal firm handles cases involving Social Security, disability, workers' compensation, and veterans' benefits. In the next hour, you'll be hearing from the candidates on the issues of concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, and groundwater protection, economic development, health care, including Medicaid or Badger care, and education. Dana Duncan was not able to be here in person for this program. He is representing clients in court this morning, but he recorded an interview with us this week. Now, after we hear it, we will be joined in our studio by Assemblyman Scott Krug, who will also be taking your questions live on the air. That's in about a half hour. If you'd like, you can call now at 1-800-780-9742, and we will put you in line. Or if you'd like, you can put a comment on our Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. But first, let's hear this 24-minute interview with Dana Duncan, Democratic Party candidate for the 72nd Assembly District.
I'm a lifelong Wisconsin resident. In fact, I'm a seventh-generation Wisconsinite. Both my mom and dad's family came to Wisconsin as immigrants in the 1840s before it was a state. My parents were factory workers. I grew up in Beloit. I served on the public school board when I was 20. My grandparents were dairy farmers, and I was lucky enough to be able to go to college and work my way through, and delivering pizzas, working for a retired Harlem Globetrotter as a house painter, and went on to law school and worked my way through law school. I'm married, 26 years, three children, 18, 21, and 24. All three have gone through and graduated from John Edwards High School, where I'm currently president of the school board.
We understand that your kids went to parochial schools, though.
Correct. I've been since I married my wife and became a Lutheran, I've been on the church council and various churches where communities we've lived for about 17 of the 26 years we've been married. So my children went through St. Paul's Elementary. My brother-in-law is the principal there. It was a decision we made personally to have a religious education for our children. And then when they were of age to go to the high school, to put them in public school.
You're president of the Port Edwards School Board?
Yes. Been president for 6 years out of the eight I've served on the board.
Why did you decide to run for the 72nd Assembly seat?
Well, I have a lot of different reasons. I don't care for the direction the state is going. There's been a lot of decisions made that I think are very short-sighted. In my business, I'm an attorney. I do Social Security, disability, and workers' comp, some veterans' benefits. I was very upset about the denial or the rejection of the Medicaid expansion because that directly affects real people that I work with day in and day out. I was also upset with how the asbestos bill was handled with veterans. My own father was a disabled veteran, so this is very important to me as well. So these are some of the things that really kind of upset me, and I had talked or thought about something like this for a long time, but I wanted to make sure my kids were grown and out of the house before I tried to tackle anything new.
Well, why don't we talk about education issues right away? You are the president of the Port Edwards School Board. Yet again, your kids attended parochial schools. Are you in favor of the expansion of school vouchers so more families could have the benefit of having their children attend private schools?
No. I did not get a handout from taxpayers to send my kids to parochial schools. The way our church is set up, the funding of the schools is through the general budget. And that's the way it's the church body deciding that Christian education is important, and they funding it by their donations. It's completely separate. See, part of the problem that I don't understand for a lot of the voucher parents is, why would you want the government to have a say in your child's religious education? It works both ways.
But you're not in favor of eliminating the vouchers in Milwaukee and Racine, are you?
No, simply because they are in a very unique situation. I would like to see eventually we fix the problems with the public schools, but that's been tried so many different times in so many different ways. Even the time I lived in Milwaukee 25 years ago, they were having problems, and I don't see that changing.
But doesn't it make sense to treat the whole state the same? If vouchers are good for Milwaukee and Racine, why aren't they good for everyone? And conversely, if they're a threat to public schools, why not eliminate them in Milwaukee and Racine too?
Well, that's the problem that many of the politicians of this state seem to have, and they think that the entire state should revolve around Milwaukee and Madison. That's not the case. Each area of the state is individual. Madison has its own unique problems. Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha has their own unique problems. The rest of the state, for the most part, has problems that are fairly common to the whole group. There's not much difference in socioeconomic situation from La Crosse to Wausau to Green Bay.
So you see Milwaukee and Racine as being special situations as far as vouchers are concerned.
It is, simply because of the problems that they have socioeconomically.
How do you feel about Act 10, the governor's law which took collective bargaining powers out of the hands of teachers and other public union workers?
Well, it seems to me that it was a power grab, quite simply. This was a situation where the teachers' unions and all the other employees were willing to bargain in good faith and to take reductions on certain things that could have been done to meet the budget necessity. Instead, it was decided that it was better off to completely eliminate collective bargaining rights. There was a lot of other things in Act 10 besides collective bargaining rights that shows me the real intent of the act.
What are those things?
Well, for instance, the governor now has the right to sell all public land. If it's in Wisconsin, one of the most sacred things that any individual has is his ability to deer hunt. And if you've hunted on a public land, be aware that the governor has the authority to sell that, to privatize that, and require you to pay fees to a private owner to hunt on that land in the future.
The governor says that Act 10 gave our public schools the tools that they needed to balance their budgets and put more money into education. You were president of the school board in Port Edwards when that happened. Did it work out that way in your district?
No, not at all, because we planned ahead. We had collective bargaining with our teachers. We actually had a four-year contract negotiated. We gave a pay raise to them to allow us an opportunity to negotiate a different health care provider. We had all this in place. So when Act 10 took place, we were already locked into a contract. Those districts that just did the annual renewal of their pre-existing contract had quote-unquote tools. But for us districts that actually did the right thing and tried to figure out ways to cooperate and achieve positive results on our own, we ended up suffering.
Would you favor repealing Act 10, scrapping it altogether, or do you think we should keep it in place and change it? I don't think even Mary Burke is in favor of repealing it.
Well, I think it's an opportunity for us to do some things collectively that will change how we go about doing employment in Wisconsin. The goal has long been, since the days of Tommy Thompson, to have two-thirds of education funded by the state. I think that it gives us an opportunity to consider, like the district attorneys, assistant district attorneys, their state employees. If we were to reclassify and make teachers state employees and consider that, then you're talking real property tax relief, something that has not been done under this administration or the previous administration. Their idea of property tax relief is simply to cap revenues so that you can't raise it. That doesn't help anybody. It limits those in local government and their ability to do anything positive. Instead, it just requires constant cuts and doesn't really solve any problems.
So you're interested not in repealing Act 10, but finding another way to provide more tax relief?
I'm looking at tax relief for property tax relief, but I think we could, on that level, go back to some form of a collective bargaining agreement. One of the thoughts I had was that we do by region, so that, you know, for instance, the Western Wisconsin region, La Crosse and Southwest Wisconsin, has a little different economic situation than, say, Green Bay does. So by putting it in regions, you do one collective bargaining for the teachers in a range.
You could instead of breaking it down district by district.
Correct, because what the problem was when you were doing that always is that you had this constant mediation arbitration situation where whichever district settled first, they set the parameters for the negotiations. It made it very difficult for districts to function and caused spiraling increases on and ended up causing spiraling increases in property taxes. But you could trade or balance that off by allowing teachers to have what would be portability of seniority. So if you work in the Port Edwards district and you have an opportunity to move into the Wausau School District and you have a 5-year of experience, you wouldn't start over with 5 years or, you know, as a new teacher in Wausau.
Got it.
Your experience would translate over.
Got it. In your legal business, you represent people who are on Social Security and workers' compensation. What's your stand on the governor's decision to not take the federal money for the expansion of Medicaid, or as it's known in this state, Badger Care?
I think it was extremely short-sighted. Governors such as Chris Christie, Jan Brewer, they accepted it because they understood the ramifications. That's our money, money from Wisconsin that was collected by the federal government that could come back to this state. 10,500 jobs, by estimate, could be created in the healthcare field if that money was accepted. It wasn't. As a result, that's a big loss for Wisconsin.
The governor says that with a $17 trillion debt, we can't trust the federal government to keep its promises to keep funding that Medicaid expansion in the years ahead. They say the government would pick up 90% of it.
Well, spoken like someone running for national office. In this particular case, he's dead wrong, because even if you have that, the problem that I'm having is we try to save a dollar and costs us $10 down the road. Even assuming that this happens, the fact that we're paying for health care for people that can't afford it saves us in the long run. I have clients who, because of the changes in the law of Badger Care, were able to finally get medical attention. Once they did, they went back to work. They're now paying tax revenue to the state of Wisconsin. They're not needing to seek disability. It's not putting any more tax on the Social Security Trust Fund. So those are very positive steps. I've had clients who were applying, couldn't get it, weren't eligible for Badger Care. One gentleman ended up with a stroke. Now he's disabled. It could have been resolved if you would have been on Badger Care and could have gotten high blood pressure medication.
Well, the governor says everyone under the poverty line has Badger Care, and for those just above it, they should be able to get affordable health insurance through the Obamacare or Affordable Care Act exchanges.
That's not the way the system was designed. The problem is what do you do if you have, and this is an example, a real example. I had a client who was on Badger Care, but he owned his house. When the rules changed, he fell above the poverty line, and the social worker told him he could not get Badger Care, could not get the $800 a month necessary for his heart medication. So he had a choice. He could give up his house or not get his medication. So I don't want to live in a society, in a state, where you have a choice between having or being homeless or dying.
How do you feel about the governor's suggestion that we drug test recipients of food stamps and people who are collecting unemployment benefits? The governor says it's a compassionate move on his part because if you apply for a job, chances are you're going to be drug tested.
I think it's a great idea. And with it, I think every member of the state legislature and every member of the executive branch should be drug tested too when they pick up their paychecks.
Are you being facetious?
If you're going to do it for one, why not for all? How many members of the state legislature and the state government in general have been picked up for DUI, drug possession, et cetera? So if you're going to say you're going to do it for the people who are the poorest in society, why not get it for the people who seem to set all the rules?
One of your clients at your law business was the Ho-Chunk Nation. How can we improve our relationship with the state's tribal governments, which are strained because of wolf hunting and also plans to put that iron ore mine in the Pinoki Hills south of Lake Superior?
Well, the biggest thing that the Ho-Chunk Nation seems to really believe in is the protection of the environment. And I guess stop doing things that endanger our natural resources, and then maybe we will improve our relationship with them.
Probably on that subject, the most high-profile issue in this campaign is the issue of CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations, and the proposal to put one of these big dairy farms, Golden Sands Dairy, in the town of Saratoga. You've made this issue front and center in your campaign. Why is that?
Well, because as what usually happens in my practice and such is, I get handed a set of facts. I start looking at them, figuring them out. And in this particular case, when this problem was brought to my attention by citizens in Saratoga, I kind of looked at it and I'm like most people, well, what's the big deal? The more I delved into it, the more I realized this is a potential catastrophe for the environment. CAFOs in general, as I've said repeatedly, are to agriculture what sweatshops and child labor were to manufacturing 100 years ago.
Isn't that kind of an extreme statement? I mean, cows and animals are not children and workers in textile mills.
Except that, for instance, how many millions of gallons of manure are being generated by that concentrated exposure? The fact that I was provided information that says that the average cow on a free-range farm, even a large corporate farm, is 7 lactation cycles. On a CAFO, it's 2. And then what ends up happening to those animals, they're fed with antibiotics, they're fed with steroids, then they're sent to slaughter, and they're put in the meat supply. And all in the name of profit. So we're eating this stuff, we're drinking the milk from these animals, we're running the risk of this stuff contaminating the groundwater, because you have rules about the front steps on your house when you construct them. There's virtually no rules on a lagoon where all this manure is put in on a CAFO.
Those big dairy farms employ a lot of people. They supply us with a lot of the milk we drink. If we shut them all down, won't that create big economic problems in Wisconsin, which, after all, is the dairy state?
I have no problem with farms. Okay, I have problems with the operation that they're talking about. That's the difference. We're going to have corporate farms. The days of my grandparents' 80 head are gone. What you're going to have is you're going to have it because the cost of milking machines, the cost of combines is huge. But to have it in that concentrated area without the necessary free range, having that amount of manure, having the talk now is liquefying it and spraying manure onto the fields, causes too many potential dangers. We can take a step back. We can eliminate this. This is not something that I've thought of. I studied where legislation has been done from North Carolina to Illinois to Missouri to Iowa to Minnesota. They've all put roadblocks on these. And Wisconsin was left wide open because Wisconsin, after all, is open for business. And now they're all coming in here after being chased out of all other states.
The incumbent in this district, your opponent, Republican Scott Krug, came out against the high-capacity wells for the Golden Sands project after water quality issues caused the closure of beaches on two popular lakes. So there is agreement between the two of you in opposition to Golden Sands Dairy. From your perspective, isn't that a good thing?
Well, it's a great thing that he finally joined me after months of my complaining about this situation. The problem is it's disingenuous. The rationale he gave was the closure of those two lakes because of high E. coli levels. A lake, Lake Dexter, was closed the week before for the same thing. The lakes are closed at least once a summer, according to the Wood County Department of Health, primarily because of runoff from goose manure. So that had nothing to do with it.
Well, he said it took several months because he was trying to work out a compromise between the dairy and the citizens who opposed the CAFO. And, you know, he finally decided he was at an impasse. What's wrong with trying to reach a compromise?
Well, the problem is that a compromise in this situation was never going to be a compromise. You can't have half a CAFO. You either have a CAFO or you don't. He didn't decide to have one, or he decided he didn't want one. And ironically, he made his decision approximately a week after he saw the election returns from my primary. And then all of a sudden now, after months of having water commissions and attending all these meetings and such and talking about this, and after going to the local citizens group, Protect Wood County, and basically saying, well, I guess you're just going to have to get used to the idea of this CAFO going in. Then 2 weeks later, after the primary, suddenly, oh, we shouldn't have this in Saratoga. He doesn't say anything else. Moreover, he's only called for a moratorium. The moratorium is already in place. The DNR can't even consider the permits until December or January. So considering his track record of going back on things he's promised, what's there to say that on November 5th he suddenly has a new revelation?
We do have groundwater problems, not only in the Golden Sands region, but Portage County. We've got lake levels dropping, one of the top trout streams in the nation, the Little Plover River, dries up periodically. But there's agriculture using all those high-capacity wells. They employ people. They provide us with food. How do we balance the need to keep our agriculture economy strong and still protect our groundwater?
Wisconsin has the public trust doctrine. That's part of the Constitution. The power has been given to the DNR. What we need to do is return the DNR to an independent body outside of partisan politics and continue to give them the ability to monitor cumulative impact. So right now they've been told, and there's been cases, administrative law judge issued a decision denying this, they could only take into account a particular permit. So if you put in 15 high-capacity wells in an area of a half a mile, it's going to draw down the water table significantly. You need to make sure that you take into account the impact on the whole area, the groundwater in general. Each of those high-capacity wells is pulling so much water, it creates what's called a cone.
Right, and there's been a decision by an administrative law judge saying right. The DNR has to do exactly that. Let's move to another area because we are running out of time.
Sure.
Among the accomplishments Representative Scott Krug cites is leading the coalition to save hundreds of jobs at the Skyward School Software Company in Stevens Point. He says he even bucked a lot of people in his own party in order to do that. Doesn't he deserve some credit for that?
He voted for the bill, which made it a uniform one-user system, which ultimately ended up Skyward not getting the bid. This was over the objection of people such as myself on the school board consortium that was the Central Wisconsin School Districts. He then changes his tune, joins on a bill already drafted by Julie Lassa and Katrina Shanklin. Then that bill doesn't pass. And instead, the only way it's changed is Julie Lassa working with members of the Joint Finance Committee to change the bill there. So he accomplished joining a bill already written, which was never passed, and then had no effect on the ultimate outcome. I guess he'll take credit for that.
Dana Duncan, my last question. Why should people vote for you in the 72nd Assembly instead of your opponent, Scott Krug?
I have spent most of my adult life fighting for people, fighting for my clients, fighting for the people who have never had a voice, who feel like No one cares about them. The one thing I can promise is you're going to have my energy, you're going to have my attention, you're going to have my passion to do public service. I'm going to be at the meetings I schedule. I'm going to return your phone calls. I'm going to answer your emails. I'm going to fight for the people of 72nd. I am going to stand up to whoever I need to in order to get done what needs to be done for the best interests of my district. I have done this for my entire career. You may not always agree with every position I have, but you will honestly say that you understand why I'm doing it and understand that I'm doing it out of a level of integrity, not political expedience.
Dana Duncan, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you accommodating by recording this. I had already scheduled 4 Social Security hearings on Thursday, and so I appreciate having an opportunity to have this recorded.
All right. Thanks again.
Thank you.
That is Dana Duncan. He is running for the 72nd Assembly seat against incumbent Scott Krug. Dana Duncan, an attorney and also the president of the Port Edward School Board. Incumbent Scott Krug is with us today in our studio. If you would like to talk to him, the phone number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back with Scott Krug right after this.
Support for WPR comes from 50,000 individuals and families in Wisconsin and beyond. Their investment in Wisconsin Public Radio enhances and extends the breadth and quality of programming available to everyone who listens. Thank you. Support also comes from Wausau's Woodson Art Museum, featuring the all-new Birds in Art, now through November 16th, along with Legacy, Lost and Saved, a tribute to extinct and endangered birds, including the passenger pigeon, lywam.org.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. We are looking at the candidates who are running for the 72nd Assembly District. We just heard from Dana Duncan, who is running on the Democratic Party ticket. He is the president of the Port Edward School Board and an attorney. And we have with us the incumbent, Scott Krug, who has spent 4 years now representing the 72nd Assembly District. Scott Krug, thank you so much for being with us. And what are you proudest of during those past 4 years?
You know, Glenn, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. And I think the biggest thing I'm proudest of this last 2 years and 4 years, I guess, in general, is working on local issues. I think, you know, the first 2 years we worked really heavily on the overriding state issues, the fiscal issues that we were left with, trying to figure out how to bridge some gaps that were left for us. This last 2 years, we took a really big focus on local issues. And I think the biggest thing that I can be proud of in local issues, A, environmental issues in Central Sands area, and B, Skyward. I mean, just looking at saving those jobs here in central Wisconsin and having them expand up to 1,000 jobs immediately. And just last week at the groundbreaking, having them announce another 1,000 jobs on top of it. That's monumental change for the region of central Wisconsin.
Did you get flack from your own party when you did that?
I did. I mean, it was tough. I mean, that's one of those things that you have to take the good with the bad, but that's what it takes. You have to educate legislators in your own party a lot, especially when you have such a large caucus like we do.
Well, as you just heard, your opponent faults you for supporting the single software policy in the first place, which, after all, did create the situation that almost led to Skyward losing all those jobs.
Yeah, he's right. You know, in the first state budget, that's one of the provisions in the first state budget. The one thing that I pride myself on, Glenn, is not being a politician who can say, hey, you know what, I made a mistake, and I'm going to close my eyes and bury my head in the sand and go back and fix it. I led the charge to fix it. It's one of those things we had to make sure was, you know, put right. And, you know, if we had done the single vendor, you know, procurement system appropriately through DPI, we may not have had a problem at all, but the process stunk after the provision in the budget. So it wasn't the budget provision that was the problem. It was the way the process worked from DPI.
You pledged that you would only stay in office for 2 terms. Why did you change your mind?
You know, the pledge is always taken out of context, and I love talking about it because I always said if there's somebody that comes along who can truly represent this district, I will walk away gladly. I mean, I don't have to stay here forever. It's something I love doing every day, but I don't have to stay for, you know, 6, 8, 10 terms. But, you know, when I saw my opponent who came out and announced January of last year, it was a guy that kind of made Marlon Schneider look like a conservative Republican. I mean, this guy's a strong progressive with really extreme views. That's something I'm not going to walk away from. I'm not going to let Central Wisconsin go back to the same things it came out of. So we're going to go for a couple more terms probably.
You were quoted in the Wisconsin State Journal as saying that your first spending cut is promising not to collect 1 cent of per diem money ever. Yet in 2013, according to Daniel Bice of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, you collected more than $10,000 of legislative per diem payments. Now, why the broken campaign promise?
You know, I love the fact we get to talk about this too, because when we talked about the per diem pledge, it was the pledge during my first term, said I wasn't going to take any per diem money. I didn't. Didn't take a dime the entire session that I made the promise in. I went back to the newspaper in 2012, right after the election, said, hey, I don't know if we can commit to that again. Things change. You know, and that's what happened this last session, is that we had a huge overriding local issue like the Saratoga Dairy that required super huge amounts of time to educate other lawmakers. I have to make an investment to be down in Madison, and that was what we made the decision on for this session, was to take per diem.
Are you going to take per diem in the next term?
You know, it depends what kind of, you know, things we're still dealing with. With groundwater, most likely. I mean, we still have a long ways to go with figuring out where we go with groundwater policy, and it's going to take a lot more time in Madison again. And, you know, Speaker Voss kind of led us with the charge of figuring out this issue, so we're going to be down there quite a bit.
Shouldn't you have told the voters that you were going to start taking per diems before the last election?
You know, and that's something I could have been a lot more direct in saying explicitly. Instead of saying, I'm not sure where to go, I could have exactly said, yes, you know, I think I'm going to. But I didn't necessarily know at the exact time that it was going to take as much time as it did.
Let's move to that issue of CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations, and the proposal to put a big one, Golden Sands Dairy, in the town of Saratoga. In August, you came out against the dairy's request for high-capacity wells. What motivated you to do that?
A lot of things. I mean, you talk about a year and a half of work on this issue. It took a lot of discussion between, you know, the folks in my groundwater committee that we put together from all four of my counties that I represent, county board members, you know, concerned citizen groups, ag members, sitting around the table looking for compromise, trying to figure out when the right, you know, approach, right, what the right policies can be, see if there's any compromise. In the end, compromise wasn't likely, and it came to the point where a decision's going to be made soon, and it's up to me as a legislator to weigh in at some point and say, hey, which way we're going to go. So I decided, because of a few local issues that rose up around that same time, that we had some contamination on the 4 Mile Creek system, it just wasn't worth the pressures on the environment for that, you know, particular project to go through at this point.
As you just heard, your opponent asks why it took so long. He says you only came out against those wells because you could see what a volatile issue it had become.
You know, in 2012, it's interesting because we had the same exact election issue at that point, and it, you know, I didn't come out at any point in that election saying, hey, I need some political points in Saratoga, I better come out against the dairy to win my 2012 election. So if that was the case, I would have done the same thing in 2012.
We've got a number of callers on that issue, so let's go to them right now. Joe in Saratoga, you're on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio with Scott Krug.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I'm calling about the CAFO, of course. No one I know in Saratoga is for it. Everybody thinks James Wasacki and you are the best buddies in the world. Now, my question is, the Wisconsin Blue Book, 2013-2014 edition, you list the Dairy Business Association Legislative Excellence Award, and you highlight it as an accomplishment. Now, what are you doing associating with these polluting bunch of yahoos? And these are the same bunch that are proposing this Saratoga-based, I should say, CAFO, because this thing is going to border almost four counties.
All right, Joe, we got your question. Let's let Scott Krug respond to it.
No, Joe, I appreciate the question. It is an excellent question. I think there's a huge misunderstanding what the Dairy Business Association does. It represents 99% of the farms in the state of Wisconsin, which are mostly family farms, the smaller farms. So they're not just involved in CAFO operations. They're, you know, necessarily, I don't know if they're behind the, you know, the dairy in Saratoga or not, but, you know, they're not the bad guys in the room here. Nobody's the bad guy in the room when it comes to this discussion. We're talking about a single project that doesn't fit in a certain area, and we're going to look for a way to make, you know, projects in certain areas work. Wisconsin has an $88 billion ag economy. We are the dairy state. We have to find ways to make it work in the right areas at the right time.
1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to talk to Scott Krug. Joe, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's go to Ned in Wausau on the same subject. Ned, you're on Route 51. Please keep your comments brief.
Sure. The reason that CAFOs are so important is that they accumulate a huge amount of waste over the winter time, and then they have a huge impact on neighboring streams and rivers when the snowmelt occurs in April. And so I think I applaud Scott Krug for coming around on this issue, but I don't like his original stand on the issue. And so As far as I'm concerned, I would like to see Dana Duncan get elected. This is really an important issue, and it's a major water quality problem for our rivers and streams that will have a great effect on the fisheries of those rivers and streams. Thank you.
Ned, thanks so much for your phone call, and if I can just piggyback that on that, Scott Krug. Mm-hmm. Dana Duncan wants to ban all CAFOs. He compares them to child labor and sweatshops.
Yeah, there are 260 operations like this in the state of Wisconsin that employ the majority of the workers in rural Wisconsin. My district covers Western Washera County. We have large farms through Marathon County, Wood County, you know, Portage County, Washera County. Our rural economies depend on finding the right places for the right projects at the right time. And that's exactly what we're going to do next session. We're going to make sure that we can do that.
Let's go back to the phones, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to Scott Krug, the incumbent Republican representing the 72nd Assembly seat. We heard from his opponent, Democrat Dana Duncan, in the first half of the program. Let's go to John in Grand Rapids. John, you're on Route 51.
Yes, hello, Mr. Krug. I have in my hand a flyer that I got in the mail from you. It says that more on welfare. Duncan is an attorney who has spent his entire professional career helping others collect taxpayer-funded welfare checks. My understanding is that he represents clients who are applying for Social Security insurance or disabilities. Wondering if that was a deliberate attempt on your part to mislead people, or if you don't understand the difference between those two programs.
First of all, Scott Krug, is that a flyer that your campaign is circulating, or is that a flyer somebody else is circulating?
No, that was a flyer from our campaign, and I'll directly answer the question. And so it's a great question, because when we talk about the folks that Mr. Duncan represents, those are folks who have been denied Social Security, and those are folks that he fights for on the other side of the coin after their denial to go back to the government and say, hey, you guys are wrong. In a lot of cases, you know, my private business, I've spent years working with people with disabilities to help them find employment. So you have to look at the two sides of the coin. Which one are we going to go after? Are we going to try to help those folks adapt to what they can still do, or are we going to help those folks, fall back farther on their self-sufficiency and not be part of our workforce? So, I mean, it's a two-sided coin, and I think the better approach is to find the abilities that people can still work with and help them find employment.
When I asked Dana Duncan why he was running in the 72nd Assembly, the first thing he said was the governor's refusal to accept the Medicaid expansion money, which he says have hurt his clients, people who are poor, people who are indigent, people who desperately need health insurance. And he says they're now being denied that because of an ideological stance by this governor.
Yeah, you know, whatever the governor's decision is, it's something that I always try to tell people, hey, I'm Scott Krug, I'm not Scott Walker. That's the governor's decision. The way the decision panned out is that if you're in poverty in the state of Wisconsin, man, woman, child, able-bodied or not, you have coverage for, Badger Care. You're covered. You have the ability to have the insurance that you need. If you're right above that, you can go into the federal exchanges, which the federal government needs to work better on, I think, on making it more affordable, which is, I think, the problem in this situation, is that the promise of being affordable health care has just not panned out so far.
What about the example Dana Duncan gave about the man who is just above the poverty line because they figure in your assets, including his house? So he had a choice being able to get his medication or having to sell his house. The way Dana Duncan described it, he has a choice of being homeless or dying.
Well, and like I said, he's still got the ability to go to the federal exchange and apply for the insurance through the federal exchange, and there's a sliding scale on whichever program you want to enroll
in. But it's too expensive for him. If
we would have just left Badger Care alone in the state of Wisconsin, the federal government didn't step in and try to overstep its authority and take away one of the best programs in the country, that this individual would still have good quality health care at an affordable rate? I mean, that's what we keep forgetting to discuss, is that the federal government has come in and said, hey, you know what? We have a better idea than what Wisconsin's always worked with and what's worked for Wisconsin bipartisanly all the way back to the creation of Badger Care. That individual would be covered, perfectly well under the, existing Badger Care program.
Why have so many Republican governors, Tom Corbett, Chris Christie, John Kasich, Jan Brewer, accepted that Medicaid expansion money? Why is this governor, I won't say he's by himself, but there are a lot of more pragmatic, if I can use that term, Republican governors who have decided to accept the money, which, after all, comes from Wisconsin taxpayers. Shouldn't we have returned it here?
You know, it's a good question, and the legislature did vote to implement the exchanges. I mean, it's something the governor made a decision
on. I'm talking about the Medicaid expansion model.
Right. Well, I mean, that's something the governor made a decision on himself, too, is to say, hey, well, this is what we're going to do based on our fiscal situation for our state. Whether, you know, John Kasich or, you know, Chris Christie have different examples and different populations in their state, that's their decision. I can't speak for that, but Governor Walker's decision in the end is based on some fiscal principles that he believes in that he thinks are going to pan out at some point in the near future. And, you know, there's a lot of legislators who believe it will.
What do you believe?
I don't know. And that's what, you know, it's hard for me to hear some of those stories too that I hear from my constituents who say, hey, I was on Badger Care at an affordable rate. Now I'm above the poverty line. Now I have to go to the affordable care plans and I can't afford it. I mean, that's a tough thing for me to deal with too in my district. So, I mean, that's why I voted to implement the exchanges in the, you know, last state budget.
Would you be in favor of accepting the Medicaid expansion money, or is that something that you're looking at?
I would love to see a study done in the state of Wisconsin that would actually determine who would be, you know, affected, how much money it would cost the state, and to see where the federal dollars would actually be coming from. When we look at some of the commitments the federal government's made already, they're already backing down from some of their FMAP commitments in the Medicare program.
Mm-hmm.
We talked earlier in the interview with Mr. Duncan about the $17.6 trillion deficits that the federal government has, that every dollar that they're spending and creating is making every other dollar that we have worth less and less and making it harder for us to, you know, get by on everything else. So it's a great discussion point for us to continue to have. I don't think anything's closed the door on it. I think the governor himself has even said, hey, we'll keep discussing this at some point.
What about the governor's proposal to do drug testing on people getting food stamps or unemployment?
Yeah, you know, I would definitely say in the W-2 program is a start. I mean, that's a work program. I mean, that's exactly what we need to do in our works program is to make sure that people who are applying for the works program are ready to go to work. You know, depending on how it's implemented and what the ramifications are afterwards, if we get those folks into treatment afterwards, if they test positive, great. But as the chairman of the Children and Families Committee, I can't sit here and say, hey, if somebody's going to test positive on a drug test, let's kick them off a program. I'm not going to go that far. I mean, that's against everything I believe in as the Children and Families Committee and a father of six to say, hey, people who need help can't get it. But if we're in the works program and you're getting a payment to be in a works program, you better be ready to go to work.
Dana Duncan said, and I'm not sure he was being facetious or not, if you're going to drug test the poorest of our citizens, maybe you ought to drug test everybody who gets taxpayer dollars, including lawmakers and even Governor Walker.
Let's do it. Absolutely. I agree 100% on one thing. There we go.
Let's turn to education. Are you in favor of the expansion of school vouchers?
You know, I'd like to see, some expansion of school vouchers. I don't know if I want to necessarily blow the door wide open completely at this point, though, because I don't know exactly the impact on rural schools yet. We took a step in our last day budget to make sure we put some dollars in to protect our rural school budgets for 3 years before we see any effects from the major expansion of the last school choice program. So in the future, I believe wholeheartedly that parents should have the choice. I just want to know the effect on rural schools before saying so.
If you just joined us, we're talking to Scott Krug. He is the incumbent Republican running for re-election in the 72nd Assembly District. We heard from his Democratic Party opponent, Dana Duncan, in the first half of the show. If you would like to join the conversation, we have a few minutes left, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Dana Duncan, the president of the Port Edwards School Board, says Act 10 hasn't worked to reduce costs in his district. What's your response to that?
Well, it's hard for me to sit here and say that he's right about it not reducing costs. I mean, the Port Edwards School Board's raised their levy 38% in the last 7 years. I mean, it's hard for me to determine where those decisions are being made and how Act 10 could have helped them or not. I think, you know, in the end, the majority of the school districts in my district did benefit from Act 10. And I think it shows in the school funding numbers that are coming through the last few years. Funding's up in those school districts. Our rates of graduation are still up. Our reading rates are going up. We're the second highest ACT scores in the entire nation. So I think things are going very well in public education. And I think, you know, you have to either buy into the concept that good people can do the right thing, even depending on the money levels or not. I mean, money doesn't always breed success. So when we talk about, you know, what the right appropriate levels of funding are because of whatever program, we still have to rely on the right people to do the right job at the right time.
Duncan also charges that the goal of Act 10 wasn't to help balance the budget, but was instead an effort to cut the power of unions and consolidate power in the hands of the governor and the Republican Party.
You know, some things it gets hard to respond to sometimes because it gets just so ridiculous. I think the entire intention of Act 10, and for everybody out there, I think everybody knows at this point, is put the power in the hands of the taxpayers. For any school district that has any funding issues of any kind that they just can't handle at any point, Now they get to go to referendum and ask the taxpayers for some help. And it gives the taxpayers more say in what was going on. They just didn't have that say earlier.
What about Dana Duncan's proposal, and this is the first time I've ever heard of it, making school teachers, public school teachers, state employees, and then having them negotiate contracts on a regional basis instead of with individual school districts?
Yeah, it's interesting. We have local school boards for a reason. We like to have the local control in our local districts for them to make decisions based on what works in their individual areas. That seems like something that's just, it's one of those left field proposals that you can't, I don't know how you can predict that adding more state employees is going to fix a problem.
Let's go back to the environment. I want to touch on something that we talked about in the first half hour, and that's groundwater problems in the Golden Sands region and Portage County. Lake levels dropping, the country's top trout stream, the Little Plover River drying up repeatedly. Same question I asked Mr. Duncan. How do we balance protection for our groundwater with the need to keep our agriculture economy strong, since high-capacity wells are part of that mix?
Yeah, it's a great question. And we are the most pumped region in the state of Wisconsin. And we are also the number one leader in beans, carrots, peas, you know, all those vegetable products that we have in the western part of my, or eastern part of my district. So it's a huge balance to make. You have to figure out where high-capacity wells can be used, how often you can pump them, what kind of parameters are going to be put in place for their use. And we have to, you know, monitor the effects of cumulative impacts. And that's something that I did directly in this last day budget, was changing a budget motion, number 375, to take the ability away from a court case to continue that now allows for cumulative impacts to be assessed by the DNR. That's a huge decision. Now the DNR can actually get out and do the job that we're paying them to do.
Should the DNR be an independent body?
You know, whether it is or not.
Bring back the public intervener.
You know, that's a tough discussion to have, too. I mean, that's why we have a legislature, is to give DNR guidance on what they can do, how many employees they may have, what their parameters should be. So whether you have an independent head or not, I mean, I've been in Madison for 4 years, and I know there's not one person down there who's an independent person. Everybody's got a political tint to them in one way or another. So it is what it is, and I don't think the top person of the DNR is the ultimate deciding factor on how any of this gets decided.
One more environmental question. Wind energy in the state. Governor Walker and your party put restrictions on the wind energy business, including larger property setbacks. That new requirement hurt a Wisconsin Rapids business, Energy Composites, which had plans to build giant turbine blades for wind farms. Now, in Wisconsin, we had 215 commercial wind turbines in 2008. It was down to 10 by 2012. There have none been built since, while Iowa, meanwhile, has become a national leader in wind energy and now generates more than 27% of its state's electricity from wind. Why did your party approve those new restrictions and kill the wind energy business?
Great question. Energy Composites is not hurt because of that decision. Energy Composites is more hurt because of Wisconsin infrastructure not being able to get their product to other parts of the country that have better yields for wind energy. Wisconsin is not a great wind energy yielding state.
The president of Energy Composites and the mayor of Wisconsin Rapids at the time said those restrictions did not help.
Well, I'm sure it didn't help, but we have a bigger infrastructure problem that allows them to still, you know, get their goods to market in every other part of the country that has higher yielding wind energy products. I mean, you can't tell me that Energy Composites is not going to create the product they have in Wisconsin Rapids for Iowa or for Minnesota or for Michigan.
Why not for Wisconsin?
Because they still can in Wisconsin. Nobody's saying you can't. Nobody's saying we don't want wind energy.
Are you in
Wisconsin.
Favor of those setbacks? Are you in favor of the restrictions that were put on?
You know, and that's
the business.
You know, I have to listen to the legislators in those areas that have those concerns, and that's what, you know, I don't have a lot of, you know, wind energy users in the central Wisconsin area to tell me yes we should do this or you know, we shouldn't. So in those areas, when the constituents in those areas are complaining, the lawmakers are making those decisions. We work together as a caucus to determine what's right as a group. And that was what was determined was right for the people that are affected the most by it. Energy Composites still has every opportunity to compete in every market that they have worldwide. Not only just in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, you know, it's national and global still.
And Scott Krug, we're down to our last 30 seconds or so. Why should people give you another term representing the 72nd Assembly District?
You know, I think it comes down to leadership and bipartisanship and being able to say no to the people that you don't want to have to say no to a lot. I mean, I've done this the last 4 years now and standing up to my own party and saying, hey, something that works in Madison, Milwaukee, Green Bay, wherever else may not work here. Can you just sit down with me? Let's talk about it. Let's educate each other. I'll help you. You help me. Let's figure out what the right approach is. I mean, just talking locally. You're talking Beeren. I wrote a bill to help them get their business park. You talk about Wisconsin Rapids, help New Page with their energy problems, help the Rome area get the trap shooting range and this long-term fiscal situation put in place. We're working with them on the trap shooting range. We're doing all kinds of things, especially with Skyward. I mean, when you talk those 2,000-some jobs in the next 10, 15 years right in the central Wisconsin areas, those are all things I've delivered on the last 2 years, let alone the last 4 years. So, you know, it comes back to, you know, responsibility and making sure that you can do the right thing for your area, and that's what I'm doing.
Scott Krug, thank you so much for being with us today. And we want to thank today's guests, the candidates for Wisconsin's 72nd Assembly District, incumbent Republican Scott Krug and Democrat Dana Duncan. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, and our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next week on Wisconsin Public Radio, I will be moderating three back-to-back-to-back debates sponsored by the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service with questions posed by our media partners, Robert Menser of the Wausau Daily Herald and Stevens Point Journal, Paige Halsey of WAOW-TV9 and Jeff Talen of WSAW-TV7. Next Tuesday evening, October 28th, 7 p.m. at the UW-Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement, it's the 29th State Senate debate with Republican Jerry Petruski and Democrat Paul DeMaine. The following night, same location, Wednesday evening, October 29th at 7 p.m., it's the 7th Congressional District debate with Republican Sean Duffy and Democrat Kelly Westland. Then, the following evening, October 30th, 7 p.m., we'll be on the UW-Stevens Point campus for the 3rd Congressional District debate with Democrat Ron Kind and Republican Tony Kurtz. That's all next week. So remember to follow us on Facebook. Don't forget to vote Tuesday, November 4th. And thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.